Hey everybody, it's Tommy, Joe, and Kendra. We are Fast and Furious, but I tell you what, a show that was near and dear to our heart that we want to make sure that if you're a new listener, you have a chance to partake in it. And that is one of our earlier episodes on mental health awareness. And Kendra, you and I both agree, it was one of our favorites, and we really want to keep this top of mind. And it was just such a great show. So,
yeah, and I mean, you know, everybody talks about the mental aspect of rodeo at the highest level. It's not just the physical, but the mental is a huge part of it also. But also, you know, Joe and Jenna Beaver came on and were so forthcoming about losing their son Brody to suicide, and I think, you know, I've seen some rodeos going on right now that are benefiting suicide prevention and awareness, and I think it's something that we should all talk openly about as a rodeo family. So I think it's a fantastic subject to just put on top of the table and shoot around, and as a rodeo family, we should be talking about all of it.
I agree with you, and you know the big thing is, just sometimes a dog or a call can save a life. But hey, this is an encore episode of No Spin Rodeo. Pay attention, listen to it. It's important stuff. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks.
Howdy, everybody. Bob Tallman for No Spin Rodeo. No politics, no BS. Just hard-hitting news and rodeo commentary from two of the most trusted sources in our sport. Kendra Santos, Tommy Joe Lucia. Listen up. Here we go.
Hello, No Spinners. I'm Tommy Joe Lucia. Welcome to No Spin Rodeo. I am joined with the best cast in podcasting, especially on the rodeo front, Greg Teagarden, our producer, and the first lady of rodeo journalism, Kendra Santos. Hello, everybody. You ready for episode 22?
Absolutely. I'm excited about this one, actually, in a somber way.
Yeah, I think this will be a good one for people to listen to.
Well, I'm in Texas. Greg, where are you at today?
I'm in Arcadia, Florida, doing the All Florida Championship.
Cool. Kendra, what location are you sitting at?
I'm sitting in the Cowboy Capital in Stephenville, Texas, at my son Taylor's kitchen table.
Then you got to be really happy because you're at home.
I'm thrilled. And I only got here, you know, about an hour ago, and they're out in the arena. He's helping other people.
I'm sorry.
So this is how important today's topic is to me.
Well, and to follow that, we talk about a lot of stuff on No Spin Rodeo. And today, we want all of you people to listen. And we want you to share this podcast with others. It's been on Kendra and I's minds, hearts, and conversation to continue to bring topics out in the light that may not want to be discussed. And this topic today's tough, and this podcast may go longer than we need it to, but it doesn't really matter because it's important. The topic for today, and there'll be multiple different angles, but it's really about mental health in pro rodeo as it relates to athletes and specifically rodeo athletes. And when we say mental health, we're talking about a lot of different facets of mental health. Everything, there's a lot of different facets of it, and it affects all of us in a lot of different ways. Because I think, and I'll say this at the end, I think we're all broken. Some of us are broken a little bigger than others, and we all need some help and someone to talk to. But we're not scared to talk about the hard things. And this isn't going to be fun, but we need to talk about it. And if we're willing to talk about it, we want you to talk about it. And we want you to think about how this might apply in your life, in somebody you know, because God willing, conversation can help and can help people and help all of us. So very important topic, depression, mental health, suicidal thoughts, all of those things that, you know, I also, and we'll talk about this later and I'm going to hand it off to you. There's a stigma in rodeo that says you got to be cowboy tough. You've heard Kendra and I say, toughen up, pull your boots on, get over it. This is all true. But part of being tough is being able to love and listen and talk about tough things. Kendra?
Well, I feel like our rodeo family, we're close and we're all pretty good at looking after each other. But there are a few things that we really just don't talk about very much, nearly enough, that impact a big part of the population in America, in the world. And that includes cowboys and cowgirls. And one of those, you know, very sensitive subjects is depression, and by extreme extension, suicide. And I personally, when we talked about, you know, were we going to take this on, and which I'm proud of us for doing that, I can think of no one better to talk on this topic than my very dear friend Joe Beaver, for the fact that he and Jenna have lived it. And I don't think it's possible for any of us to truly understand. You know, we when these sorts of things happen, I sometimes like imagine, but to be clear, whether or not it was spoken of publicly, I have known young cowboys, old cowboys, a cousin of mine, Hall of Famers, NFR cowboys, who have taken their own lives. And a lot of times it's usually, you know, a few people on the inner circle know, and, you know, it leaks out, whatever, but we don't really talk about it as a family. And I don't know. I remember watching a father a few years back who lost a son, and the way he put it, I still remember it. He said, you know, we all, if someone breaks their arm or if someone has cancer, we're all, you know, concerned and praying for them. And it's all very open. But when there are issues in people's brain, which what could be a more important body part, we don't talk about it. And that really, really meant something to me for him to say that. Because I think there is not a person living, if you've lived very long, who hasn't been impacted by this subject in some way, family members, friends. If that many people in this world suffer from depression, I don't, but I have people dear to me who have, and we better be talking about it and see what we can do to help them. And speaking openly about it, a lot of people aren't willing, but it's a big first step.
So before Joe comes on, some of our listeners may not be completely aware of the past. He's going to be jumping on soon. Can you set up Joe and Jenna's life a little bit of background if someone's not aware of the circumstances that he'll be speaking on?
Well, the short version, everyone knows, you know, Joe B., one of those rare royals in our rodeo world who, you know, as a rookie of the year, won his first gold buckle, you know, 8-time world champion, just a freaking stud in the arena. 12 years ago, Joe and Jenna lost their only child, their son, Brody. He was 20 years old. And they are very brave to come forward here. And I'm grateful. And I was there a lot, you know, when it happened. And it's something that doesn't leave you. It's that's, you know, so I am just, they have been through the ups and downs of life. Forget about the rodeo roller coaster. The ups and downs of life that these people have lived is insane. And I, yeah, in talking about this other day with Joe, like, I want to kick things off with the fact that he literally died once, you know. I want him to speak of that and to tell us about, you know, part of why he's still here is because he's got things to do. And it seems like number one on his agenda tends to be helping people. So here he comes again. Joe B., good afternoon.
Hi, Kendra. How are you?
I'm good. You?
You know me. It's another good day. I make it good every day. Try to.
Beautiful. All right. Well, just to just dive straight in.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. This is a tough subject that we're talking about today. And we're very, very grateful for your willingness to talk openly. I thought it would be interesting up front for you to take us back. You've been there. I mean, you've literally died in that airport.
Mm-hmm.
What year was that? What happened? And how has that impacted your life since?
February 1991. It changed me. You know what I mean? I tell everybody, Kendra, Brody saved my life and he didn't about kill me. Because I had a really good counselor, a really good friend of mine. He's dead now. But Ronnie was a gangster. He was an outlaw. He was big time gangster, you know, everything you could think, drugs, laundering money, fake money, the whole deal. Anyway, when he got busted, that was his out. They took everything he had and he had to be a counselor. So I had the best counselor in the world, Ronnie Wilkinson. I couldn't fool him. You know what I mean? And I remember after I OD'd and I'm going to tell you this, you know, if you wake up and they're asking you who's president, you know, what's your social security number, what's your mother's maiden name, you're not in a good way. And so when I came back home, he told me, he said, here's the deal. I know a lot about this and I can do a lot for you. But if you go home and you pick that little boy up and you sit in a chair with him and you don't quit for that, you'll never quit for me or anybody else. It's got to be your own deal. And we're talking about drugs and that lifestyle okay. to kill me. I mean, you know, I OD'd okay. on cocaine right there in the airport in El Paso, you know. I lived on it for, I don't know, 4 or 5 years there. And then I knew I was in a bind and I went and stayed with a dear friend of mine, Lee Ferris in California. You know, Lee, I stayed with him for about 4 months, the spring rodeos and got dried out, got off the shit, thought I was good, you know, relapsed right there. And all of a sudden I've got a wife, you know, 5, 6 months, 7 months, 8 months. We've been married. I got a little baby that's 3 months old and I've spent all my money and OD. If that doesn't fix you, you're unfixable. But there's also that part of you, and even me, I was unfixable because I thought it wasn't no big deal until Ronnie told me that. And that day's changed the rest of my life forever. You know, I honestly thought, and me and you have talked about this before, I thought, you know, being how you are, I thought, man, I'm got another chance at life here for all this good I'm going to do. I'm going to win this and do this and blah. I'd already won plenty. You know, I mean, people knew who I was in the rodeo world. I had gold buckles and I had all that BS. And not BS. That it's something that we strive for. You want to be the best you can be. I should not say that way. I'm saying all the stuff I thought I was going to live for. That's not why I came back. I think I got put back to help people through bad times, to do the best that I could do for people when I could, and to show maybe some other people, you don't know what down is and you don't know what the bottom is till you've been at where I was. And I've had a really blessed life since then. I've been through a lot of bad deals since then. You know, I've lost, you know, Brady Helms. We about raised him and he lived with us and, you know, I lost him. And I remember speaking at his funeral and saying, or talking that day at the funeral with people and saying, it's the worst day of my life. Watch what you say, because it can always be worse. And, you know, when I put those my buddies on that plane to go to Ponoka, you know, I lost Randy Dearlam and David Bowen in 2 hours and I didn't know it for 6. They actually were living with me. We were gone rodeoing for the summer, but I had to go home and clean my closets out, you know, their stuff. So you think you've been at the bottom till you've been at the very bottom. You know, if I sit back and I hear a guy telling a poor me story and I could tell he's on the fence and he's not really wanting to quit or change. And he's, oh man, I've been at the bottom. No, you ain't been at the bottom. Because if you ever bottom out to the bottom, you strive to get back to the top. And I think the only reason God sent me back down here is to help people through what maybe they were going to go through that were close enough to me to let me help them. Because I was gone for like 3.5 minutes, 4 minutes. That's a long time to be dead. You know what yes. I mean? And come back. And I can remember like it was yesterday, you know, I had a conversation with David Bowen, and I hadn't seen David since the day he trotted out of the arena at St. Paul and said, I'm head to short, go, I'll see you tomorrow. And I hadn't, you know, seen him since. And I sat and talked to him just like we're talking. But there kept this powerful word, kept saying, you got to go back. You got to go back. And I'm like, no, I'm good here. I'm good here. And I think that may give me an inside feel, if you will. I don't know how to, other word to say it, but may a little more understanding of where Brody is, where Brady is, where all these guys are that have dealt with it. I know where they're at.
Well,
not a bad
did, did Bowen not tell you, see you when I see you?
Yeah, that's why I always say that. Yeah. He was trotting, he forgot his coat, first of all. I had his coat on. It was cold that morning at St. Paul. You know me back then. I didn't take care of nothing, you know, me or anybody else. And I had his coat because it was cold and we left the rig that day. I walked by his rig and I grabbed me a coat. And he's trotting out of the arena and they said, hey, it's cold in Ponoka. And he said, give me that damn jacket. And I'm like, yeah, I threw it to him. And he said, see you when I see you. And I said, yeah, bring my jacket back, laughing, you know, and it's the last time I saw him.
And I was at Dave P's house with Teresa right after that, and they had that brand new baby Jade.
Yep.
You know, and
yep.
The times. I think when I'm listening to you, there's something that jumped out at me is that I've never really thought of before, but I remember when Lane Frost died and I thought if it could happen to Lane, it could literally happen to anyone. You know, he's a world champion, you know, as good as they got. And that could happen to him. And I'm sitting here thinking, Joe B, like, you know, there's all these different reasons that lead to all these different things we're talking about. But it's like most people, you know, who watch you on TV would be like, you had the world by the tail. You know, you had gold buckles, you know.
Yeah.
And if it could happen to you, it could happen to anyone. And that's where I think that would be a wonderful message for people to understand. It's like it's not, you know, whether it's depression or drugs or drinking or whatever it is, it's not particular to a certain type of people. It's not for the guys who can't win. It's not for the girls who aren't pretty. It's not for, you know, no one is immune, right? This is,
hey, nobody is. Cause let me tell you something, to be honest, if they'd have called me, a year and a half before Brody died, a year, and said, hey, you need to come to Vegas. Your boy's on the 50th floor and thinks he can fly and he's going to jump off. I'd have said, shit, I'm on my way. But when he did decide it was enough and it was time for him to go, I never saw it coming. Never. I mean, he was as good as he'd ever been. He was clean. He wanted to go to broadcasting school, you know, stepped right in there and took the test like nothing to it. I mean, you're not going to see, you know, you're not going to see the departure day coming from a male 15 to 40 if it's by suicide. I'm just telling you, I've done a lot of research and I've, you know, seen a lot of things happen. You're not going to know it. I think that's where you're talking about. It's anybody. It's not a certain person. And you never know what people are going through. You know what I mean? It's just like, you never know. I mean, I think that's given me we have two choices. And I told Jenna this a long time ago after Brody died. You know, I said, listen, we got two choices. Yeah, we can sit in this house and sit in this bed, lay in this bed, and you wither away and have no use of life because we've give up. Or I can, you know, get out there and we're going to try to help the kids we can help. We're going to have fun. We're going to live. You don't do it for yourself. The other day we had I spoke to a girl and thought nothing of it, just because, you know me, if I see you walk by, look at me, I'm going to speak to you. You know, I said, hey, how's it going today? You know, about four more steps, and she spun around, tears in her eyes, needing to talk. And I was like, oh, shit, you know, that's what I'm here for. You know, that's what Jenna, I said, hold up a minute. I'm tell you all I want to tell you, but you talk to Jenna, because she's, you know, and this person was she's a sweetheart lady. I mean, she really is, but she had gone through losing a son. And it doesn't matter how they go. When you lose one, you lose one. You know what I mean? It's hard. You're not supposed to outlive your children, you know, bottom line. But I think that part of it is what makes us maybe, you know, I'm always chasing the next deal. But I'm always chasing the next deal, looking for somewhere or somebody that we can make a difference on, you know, and
right. And well, I would for people who aren't close personal friends with you guys, I should say that we all lost Brody in 2011, mm-hmm. the summer, August. He was 20.
Yep.
And was so accomplished, and you know, national high school champ, and you know, everybody loved Brody. And so I would love, I remember, you know, being there for a lot of that. I remember I was there with Donna McSpadden. I remember being at your house. I remember being at your house for Thanksgiving with, you know, all these happy memories. But even my memory now is not clear because everyone was so sad. And I would, for people, there are people in our rodeo family who are going through something similar right now. And I don't know if you can explain how it felt then and how it feels now, because we can't understand. We cannot say, oh, I know just how you feel, because we have no effing idea how you feel.
No, and I'm going to tell you something else. And I think, you know, I talked to, a good friend of his is a good friend of mine. And I talked to him the other day and I said, hey, listen, you can't do the blame game. You can't do the I wonder why. You can't do any of that. You'll drive yourself nuts if you do. And same thing with the family. You know what I mean? You can't do that. I remember one time he hadn't been gone long, 6 months, a year, and a guy said, you know, well, you know, man, we just don't know why, but you'll be able to ask him someday when you see him. And I looked at the guy and I was like, do you think I'd give a shit why then? When I see him, I'd just be glad to see him and hug him and go on, you know? And it's a lot for family. I'm going to tell you, it's kind of weird, but you know that song, if heaven wasn't so far away, I'd go for the day? That's all you would ask for. I don't want to keep him. God had plans another way. Was it a good way? Was it the perfect way? No, but who's going to, you know, how am I to know what was going on, really? I thought I knew, but deep down, you do not know. But it's not that I would try to fix it now. I just would go along with it and be glad to see him. So you have to think about, and you're right. And I told Jenna this one day too, you know, she was having a hard time at the house and you know, you've been there. It's everybody's there. It's our place to hang. You know, you've stayed, the boys have stayed. You've been with us, your family. Y'all have been family for years. You know, I told her one day, I said, listen, we can either live with all the good memories here, or if there's a bad memories that bother you too much, we can make a hay barn out of this place and go somewhere else, you know, but you know, I had to include her and see what she thought, because I wanted to hold on to all, like you said, all the good memories. And they're the ones that make me smile and laugh and, you know, get mad because he's not around where I can talk to him about it. But other than that feeling, you can never know why. I mean, you're not going to know why. I don't care what all kind of research. You're not going to know why, because I went to a Catholic school. And I wasn't a Catholic. And the nuns were big time on two things, Friday night football and God. And my rodeo, and as long as I paid all my tithe, you know, made sure that I was winning and paying, they were good with it. And I was mad one day about losing this friend. And she told me, she said, hey, Beaver, let me tell you something. You know, what's your birthday? And I told her my birthday. She said, what's your departure date? And I said, I don't know. And she said, exactly. But the man upstairs knows. You're born with a birth date. You're born with a departure date. She said, do you think that if a baby 7 days old didn't have that for departure date, that he would take a little baby away? And I kind of looked at it for a minute and it made sense. And I've had to rely on that now a lot since I've lost David and Randy and Brady and Brody and, you know, Sean McMullen. And I mean, Lane, and you can just go on and on. Brent Thurman, you know, there's a lot of them. I think, Kendra, that to make it and to know that it's just what was going to happen. You know, as a parent, you cannot blame yourself. You cannot figure out who to blame. You can't figure out how to fix it. It's just what it is.
But as a mom, you think you can fix it.
Oh, sure.
I mean, because that's what you do, right? You always, whatever is wrong. And so you, that's the, I think, and I had a lady also tell me that the hardest part about losing a child is that was truly a seed, a true part of you. And so there is a part gone. When you feel like there's a hole, it is. There is a hole gone. And it just takes you for life and friends and.
Well, you know,
well, you, my, know you got my, two of them. You got two of them, Kendra. Boys and moms. Really hard. You know, Tom Joe, I don't know about you, but my dad, he wouldn't cook for me if I was hungry. He wouldn't wash my clothes. My mom would do both. He'd tell me go to the cafe, go to the laundromat or the cleaners. And it's a mom and a boy thing that makes it double hard, I think, on moms and boys.
My favorite line that I think of out of the Bible is that it's not our place to judge. And I hear when these things happen, I hear so many people in our rodeo community saying, you know, what a selfish thing to do. And, you know, why didn't they see the warning signs, or how could he do that or whatever? I would love for you to speak to that, because I surely
there are no warning signs, first of all, because
on boys, men,
psychologists, all kinds of them will tell you that guys do not ever give it away.
The ones who talk about it aren't going to do it, right?
That's correct. Right. That's right.
As a rule, right?
As a rule, yes.
And I mean, look,
And then there's the biblical part of it, you know. The New Testament does not say what the Old Testament says. And I truly believe that suicide is a brief moment. And the psychologists that have interviewed the people that have survived, they tell them that it was such an instantaneous thing. It wasn't like this big plan.
It's not thought and planned out.
It was just all of a sudden they grabbed the gun and was done. And then they lived through it. And you know,
and so for the warning signs, we're it's not like we can say, well, look out for this,
no,
right?
It's not with boys or men.
Not from what
they'll tell you, 15 to 40, you'll never know if it's for real.
And Dee Pickett's wife, Brenda, is a psychologist, and they stood up for us at our wedding. So you can imagine how many conversations we have had and everything she studied for a long time trying to help and figure it out with me. That's all she found, but I've read it elsewhere. It's a lot.
Go ahead.
I got a quick question for Joe and Jenna. Do you guys feel that our culture as men, but also maybe compounded a little bit in rodeo, is that we don't admit when we're broken and we don't admit that we're not tough, and that might play to this a little bit? I mean, I think it goes to, but do you think that rodeo also, with kind of our mentality, Joe B, this, you know, if you better not be the P word, right? Yep. Or get out. Do you think that plays into this any?
I think it's football too. You know how football guys are. You know what I mean? We've been taught from a young age, or I say we, I was. I'd say this. I'd say the top 20% of winners in any event in rodeo, football, baseball, whatever, you're taught all along to take whatever and keep going. You know, you don't get mentally beat. You don't get physically beat. You don't get anything. So I would say some of those guys, maybe so. I'd say the rest of them, I don't think it mattered as much as we as a society want to try to put it somewhere, because then you look at the other end of the spectrum, and if you're a weak person and do what they say, it's because you're weak, you know? I think it's just a short wave, circuit out, instant, you know, craziness, however you want to put it, loss of common sense, loss of thought, and then it's too late.
Do you guys, since I don't ever know what to say, except I usually sit and cry with people. You guys do know. So if you're speaking to people who have been through the unthinkable, do you have particular words of advice or encouragement for them that you feel like have helped you the most?
Some of the things Joe has talked about, like the departure date, you know, and the fact that it's so unknown, you just don't get the warning signs. Because Brody was as good mentally as I had seen him. I mean, he'd been in rehab, but it had been a while, and he seemed so good, you know? So,
yep.
You know what I try to tell them all? I try to tell them the story of me being there and talking to David, because I promise you that was the most peaceful spot and the most comfortable spot I have ever been in. And I've never been uncomfortable much at all. You know what I mean? But I try to tell him it doesn't help. But I used to tell Jen, I said, Jen, I know where he's at. It's okay. You know, she didn't get it. I mean, she's never, you know, thank goodness she's never OD'd or been dead for a while, you know?
you realize your child is in a better place, but you want to touch them one more time. And feel like you could stop it if you could touch them one more time. It takes forever for that feeling to go away.
And I tell you what else, Kendra, we talked about this, you and I, a long time ago. And I would tell the parents and I would tell the wives or the kids, people are going to say the dumbest shit ever to you. I don't know if they don't realize what they're saying. I don't know if they're being callous and don't care. I don't know if they're just at a loss for words and don't know what to say or do. But you have to know that they're going to say some stuff that you just want to look at them or just punch them in the nose, and you got to just take it. Because once again, like you said a while ago, unless it's just a chosen few that you don't want to be a part of that, you don't know what they're going through. So I don't think they mean it, and I don't think it's intentional, but man, you're going to hear some stuff that makes you just want to scream.
We talked a little bit about how these sorts of subjects, and there are others, that I feel like rodeo people don't tend to talk openly about, only with our very innermost circle. But, you know, as a group, rodeo people tend to be, there's kind of a demographic that is pretty prevalent, and including, you know, a lot of patriotic, God-fearing people generally, you know, that sort of thing. We also talked about that, you know, oh, you got to cowboy up and, you know, suck it up and tough it out and all that sort of thing. But you told me the other day about how, like, when you feel you have a sense and you tell people all the time, and I know you do because you've said it to me and you've said it to my boys, like, call me.
Yep.
Like, the reaching out part is, it seems like it would be a step or a start if we could let people in rodeo, cowboys, cowgirls, young, old, whatever, it's not a sign of weakness to reach out to people so that you're not alone, right?
Yeah, and I mean, it's anything from little stuff like, you know, like we talked about Taylor, man, I'd tell him in a minute, get your hips fixed. Don't get to the point, you know, Weston, get your back fixed, you have to. I wish I could have got Houston Hutto, you know, by the ears and said, don't eat them pain pills to keep going with your back hurt. Go get fixed. You know what right. I mean? Drugs are at the center of almost all of the downfall. And listen, I can say it because when I fell in here, it was drugs, rock and roll, sex, fast cars, planes. I came in the mid 80s, and I'm telling you, they were, you know, I can name you 20 out of the top 15 in every event, 20 guys that were wide open all the time.
And working air everywhere.
Yeah. I mean, so I just, I think I see it starting. You know what I mean? I'm like, oh shit, don't do that. And when I tell somebody, I say, man, call me. I mean it. I don't care if it's 3 o'clock in the morning. I know what you're going through and thinking. I've already done what you're doing. And you can't do one thing. You can hardly not do one thing that I haven't done or thought, you know, been through. So yes, if you, you know, reach out. But I think what gets us, and this goes back to what Tommy just talking about, what gets us is we don't want to do it. And we don't think we got a problem. Because drugs will mask your common sense. And drugs tell you, man, you ain't got no problem. It's just your back. Eat two more pills. You know, get you a half a bag. You'll be all right. Just keep rolling. And that's what right. gets us, I think, the worst. Or you know it, you got a problem.
Well, they talk a lot about, you know, with different, whether it's mental illnesses, depression, different thing, physical pain, self-medicating. Mm-hmm. And whether it's drugs or alcohol, there's a whole lot of self-medicating that goes on with cowboys. And I mean, I've seen people drink Banamine.
Yes.
decks,
lived on.
It's, you know, really scary stuff that, like, you know, it's for horses or whatever it is. And, but again, you know, it's like, well, whatever it takes, you know, to get through this afternoon's run or whatever it is. But one thing leads to another. And to be clear, most of those things are depressants. So that if you add those on top of physical pain or depression, you're compounding the problem to a really scary level. Right?
Yes, our country is so full of antidepressants that have written on their label could cause suicide.
Hey, and I'm going to tell you something else. A lot of drug. This will get you off drugs, but read the bottom lines. It also causes suicide. You know, that's not helping. I mean, so you're off of drugs, but now you got suicide thoughts. I mean, come on, really? There's got to be somewhere in there that's got to be common territory and common sense to help people and not force them into the other side.
Well, I mentioned to Greg and Tommy Joe before you guys got on that I, you know, in rodeo, I have known old cowboys, young cowboys, Hall of Fame cowboys who've committed suicide, NFR cowboys, cowgirls also, people who roped very well. And so it is not particular to you whether you're talented, pretty, popular, rich, or anything else. This has nothing to do with anything, which you are living proof. And because all the people who were idolizing you while you were laying dead in an airport, this I don't know what the percentage is of these kinds of issues in our world, but it's huge and obviously applies to cowboys, cowgirls, and the rodeo family. So I can't even tell you how grateful that I am to the two of you. I mean, not only do you open your home and your hearts to all sorts of young people, including my own, but your willingness to speak about this when most people won't is a priceless gift to our rodeo family. And so I'm grateful for that. And I'll probably stop talking before I start crying, but I'm so thankful.
You know, the last thing I'd want to tell people is if you've been in this situation and you've lost a kid and, you know, suicide's one way to lose them, car wreck's another, you know, cancer's another. However you lose one, you know, it's if you don't have two things, if you don't have faith and you don't have somebody that can stick with you through the bad times, and you got to have a friend that you could call in the middle of the night and scream and cuss and cry or whatever you got to do to get by. If you don't have those, it's going to be an awfully hard road to get down. It's a curvy road, and you got to watch it because it'll sure make you lay blame back where it doesn't belong. So, you know, dig in your faith, dig in your friends that you know you can count on, and just know that this was planned. This wasn't your cause. Your happening. Your blame. This is. I just feel like it's all caused ahead of time. I mean, planned ahead of time. You don't think you have the power to stop it if you stop and think where the power came from.
Well, thank you. And I love you guys. You guys have made a difference in countless lives. And every single one of us feels like, you know, we're the most special to you. And that's your gift to all of us. So thank you both so, so much.
I think that's why I got up off that floor, just so I could hang out with people like y'all.
Thank you guys. Take good care. We appreciate you so much.
Tell Taylor, get those hips fixed and call me when he gets done. So I'll know it's okay.
Thank you. Thanks so much. I'll do it.
TJ, see you, buddy.
Thank you guys. Thank you all. Thanks, Jenna. Thank you very much.
Yep.
Our second guest, and we don't have a bunch of guests on our show, but our second guest, we want to welcome Brett Gardner. I thought maybe he had a French fancy name, but it's just Gardner. He is, in case you didn't know, he's the most, this is fact, he has the most awards as a Canadian rodeo announcer that there are. We're talking about, I don't know, double digit CPRA announcer of the year, Calgary Stampede, all of them, big time, big stud on the microphone. Please welcome to No Spin Rodeo, Brett Gardner. How are you today?
Hey, I'm great. I'm excited to be here. Thank you so much for for having me. And I appreciate you guys taking the time. And I just have to be honest, it's pretty cool to get to hang out with Kendra Santos. Not that I don't think the world of you, Tommy Joe, but you said it yourself. She's truly the first lady. So
we get this all the time.
Yeah,
we get this all the time.
Yeah,
and she sits there, acts like she's Miss Humble, and when she hangs up, she'll give it one of these. She got Tommy Joe again. Okay.
Yeah.
Thank you, Brett. Thank you.
Thank you for everything you've done. It's amazing.
Thank you.
Well, Keenan Vine, who's a friend of ours, I had called him because we wanted to have a show talking about, what we started the show on is that this is an uncomfortable topic overall, but even more uncomfortable in a sport where you're supposed to be tough on both ends of the arena. And we don't see open communication about mental health issues, which are a much broader scoping thing, and even into depression, which my dad seriously suffered from. And one of the things that Kendra and Greg and I talked about at the top before we even went on air is this stuff really touches everybody. We're all broken in one way or another. And you have the creds to address this, and we love having experts on. So, you know, we talked to Joe B. He talked about suicide and their approach, him and his wife Jenna, on, you know, getting past losing a kid, which we talked, I can't even imagine this. And so it says on your website that you're an announcer, a speaker, and I thought this was a good lead-in. I'm not the journalist here, Kendra is, but it also says you're an advocate. Do me a favor, define advocate, and what are you an advocate for?
Great question. I can't say in all the years that I've talked and had people ask questions to me if they've ever actually asked that one. So much appreciated. I think for me personally, and the idea of advocate is someone in my experience and in my story is willing to have the conversation and the real conversation surrounding mental health. So I think an advocate and what it means to me is not only to talk the talk, but to walk the walk. And that is one of those things that certainly moved me into this line of work in what I refer to as the mental health and performance arena, where I spend, you know, a lot of time and sometimes the majority of my life. So advocacy for me, it just means really standing up and but also walking that walk. I always say, even though I'm professional, I may not be the greatest clinician, I may not be the greatest mental performance coach, but I can guarantee you this, you're going to get the best of me and I'm going to go fight it out with you in the trenches. That's what I think a true advocate does.
And just to be fair, so that our listeners know, you have a master's degree in sports performance and psychology, and you're currently on your way to having your doctorate. So it's fair to say that you've studied clinical studies and things of this sort. And so we want to be kind of specific here and ask your kind of thoughts on our topic of today is about, you know, mental health kind of within our sphere, but overall. And do you have any personal experience? So are you one of these guys that goes out and is an expert but hasn't lived it? Like, why are you an advocate now?
I appreciate the question. And I think, you know, I've told my story, you know, quite publicly and more predominantly in Canada. But really, when I go through in a lot of what I do now and kind of that keynote presentation piece and talking about it is truly kind of originates with my story. And man, I've had a tremendous career, and you were very kind in acknowledging my credentials as an announcer. And I've always said, man, I have a set of rodeos that everybody would love to go to. And I've ticked all those boxes as a Western sports broadcaster. But just to give you some time context, kind of 2016 and 17, things got really hard for me. And if we're to say they got dark for me, they certainly did. And I've talked publicly, I'm an anxiety depression guy. So I suffered from, you know, kind of undiagnosed anxiety, just didn't know what it was, didn't have the language. When it got hard, there was a time in my story that I needed to reach out and get some help. And it was kind of 2018 when I started to reach out and get some help because I just learned that I couldn't do it alone. I thought I had to be the guy. I always said, you know, when you step on the stage at the Calgary Stampede in front of 25,000 people, they better think you're ready to go. And it doesn't matter. I mean, you as a producer, Ken, for somebody who's been a part of every big rodeo in this industry for years, it's like the show must go on. And within the culture in which we live, it's like, I don't care if you're not feeling good. I'm going to count you in 10 seconds because the Calgary Stampede's about to start, big guy. You better bring it. So we just had to go. It didn't matter how we felt. It didn't matter what we were bringing in. It didn't matter if I was struggling home with my wife or kids. We have to deliver because that's the culture. And I get it. That's the job. But I just got lost in that, right? And there's a lot in that story. We live in a world where it's often ego-driven. It's a, and pardon me, Kendra, you know, it's a male-driven kind of oftentimes kind of that big masculine feel, or at least that's what we comprehend it to be. And it's hard to work around some of those egos. It's hard to say, hey, I'm not okay. I don't know what's wrong with me. Maybe something is wrong with me, but it just ain't right. So what am I going to do with that? Well, in my story, it was very much I'm going to shove it down and not acknowledge it, right? And it was okay until it wasn't okay. And when I talk about anxiety, depression, we may get there today. What sometimes we don't know is that anxiety and depression are like first cousins. I often say they're the opposite side of the same coin. And in our industry, we see a lot of people that really run with a bit of anxiety, right? It's a sport that's just completely full of unpredictable situations, money, finances. Did I forget to enter? My horse come up sore, right? There's so many things that are out of our circle of control, and this angst is just driven in us. But anxiety is built, right? It serves its purpose. It's telling us a tale like, hey, something's going on here. And for me, there was cues. I said, I remember getting on a plane one time and I was getting on a 5-hour flight flying back home. And I said, I remember sitting there doing everything I could not to cry the whole time. And if you want to say like, oh my God, dude, they just paid you a whole pile of money to work on national television, drove you in the big black car. You're the man. And now you're falling apart. So scary, right? We don't have any language for this. This isn't what John Wayne told me it was going to be like. So for me, there's those cues, right? And it was just, that's my anxiety. And that's our body and our brain telling us that something's just not right. Hey, what can we do here? But the problem is when we don't deal with some of those things like anxiety, they eventually find themselves into depression because our body and our brain quit fighting, right? We think of everything. We just get to a time. It's like, geez, what happened to them? And I'm sure anybody listening to this, you can think about those friends that you've had that have pulled back from those social situations. Or, geez, they're just not the same, man. Tommy Joe just doesn't seem himself today, right? Because we just get to a point where the body and the brain's like, I've told you, you know, and it's like, Brett, I told you, man. You were full of emotion. And I remember trying to drive home one time and it was like an hour and I couldn't even drive. My body just shut down. It's again, they're just telling us, the check engine light's on. Right? It's just giving us these signs, but can we listen? Well, we're not built to listen because the Western sports world, and often, you know, and I say this with the men's mental health space, we're not built to listen. That's not what we were told. We're in this generation where we just didn't know how, and it's not like, oh man, and I don't want to project anything. It's like, here's what's wrong with me. It's like, no, we don't know what we don't know, and that's okay. Right. It's like the same thing. You know, you got a calf horse and, you know, Kendra, your son's calf horse isn't working as sharp. Geez, something's off. You're going to change something. Geez, I'm going to put a different bit on him or a different headset or maybe that saddle. We're going to start to look at what's going on. We don't push away. Right. We don't like, oh, no, there's nothing. Right. But when it comes to this mental health piece, it's scary because it's invisible and we don't have language, you know.
And therefore, in our rodeo family, we tend not to talk about it. And we also, sure, in our sport, it's very, very common is the self-medicating of some things that would probably diagnosed, right, with either drugs or alcohol.
Sure.
That happens a lot, right? And alcohol, as an example, is a depressant, right? And so, but sometimes can that feel like you're countering anxiety by drinking?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for sure. And that's a huge piece. And I know, pardon me, Tommy Joe, I went on a bit of a rant there, you know, but that was really kind of my story that led me to this space because I needed help and to help others. But, you know, to jump back to that idea, Kendra, for sure. And we see that a lot in the Western sports world because we're starting to try and find something to cope. And it was interesting when we try and look at statistics. There's not necessarily a lot in the rodeo world, and I say this with all due respect, Is there some in the NHL and the NFL? Sure, they're just bigger. There's more money there, so we see those statistics from there. But we also see them in the agricultural industry. And if I'm to just reference Canadian statistics, you know, middle-aged Caucasian farmers or those embedded in the ag industry have a substantially higher rate of suicide than the average demographic. They also have a higher, you know, rate of consumption because, again, it's a very world we live in where there's a bit of angst. There's this bit of unknown. And when we talk about kind of coping or soothing, why am I drinking? It's often because I'm running away from a feeling of something. Like, clinically, I'm looking, I'm like, there's a void here that needs to be filled. And so I'm filling it with drugs or alcohol, right? We see it often in first responders when it comes to trauma. And it's like, it's the story in our head, but so often it's the feeling in our body. And we can never rationalize the feeling. I'm very somatic. Something happens or like it kind of takes my breath away. It's like chest tightens or, you know, we feel those butterflies or it's like, but we have to have an answer. So we give ourselves an answer a lot of times, but we fill the blank in with something that's often not true. Geez, I feel this way because I'm not in the top 15 in the world. So if I don't get in the top 15 in the world then, but I don't like this feeling and I don't like this story in my head that's getting stronger, how can I quiet that down? And we often
I'm running at my credit cards. My wife's mad that I'm gone. Whatever it is.
Yes, for sure. Yeah.
Yeah, and I remember, so when I decided to quit performing as a clown, this is very specific. Same thing, Brett.
Yeah.
I realized that when I, because I worked very hard at it, and I was, people may not agree, but I was pretty damn good at it. When I walked into that arena, I had to be on.
Yeah.
And I immediately realized in my trailer one night that I see now why actors and other clowns and other performers in general turn to something else to get them in that place. It was very obvious to me that had I, and never done it, but I figured that had I snorted a line of whatever, I'd probably go out there and be great, which would compound the problem.
Sure.
Because then I would have given recognition to that. And that's why I quit clowning, by the way, because I realized when I went out there, I wasn't happy.
Sure.
I wasn't enjoying it anymore. And so I stopped performing.
Yeah.
I stopped performing and I went into a different field because of this fear of I will be an addict. I will start drinking. And my dad drank when he walked in the ring. And there's been millions of clowns that drank. And there are clowns out – there are performers out there today in our industry that have had to fight that battle.
Yeah.
So it's not just cowboys.
Yeah.
As you said, it's announcers, it's performers.
Yeah.
It's all of us because the truth is – you'll hear me say this a lot. We're all broken.
Sure.
It's how big is the crack,
right?
And are we aware? And so it's interesting to me, and I'm going to ask you some more specific questions, but when we listened to Joe and Jenna Beaver, they said there's no signs, but that's looking at it from the outside. But it's interesting to me that listening to you, and if you're listening to us out there, the person suffering, should recognize, like you said, something ain't right. And brilliant about how do we it's brilliant. We do things for our horses and our animals and in our businesses when everything isn't right. We immediately jump in there and try to fix it.
Yeah.
But there's such a creepy irony that we won't do it to our with ourselves. Right? I think that's just, man.
Yeah,
that's powerful, cool.
Well, and it doesn't make sense when you say it like that, right? Because we would turn over every resource. We would do everything we could to make sure. I mean, you know, I'm sure somebody listens to this and they've been to the NFOR and they think about the money that they've invested in just care and maintenance to keep, you know, their A string of tie down or open horses going. And they wouldn't think twice about it. But it's like, geez, if I go see a, you know, psychologist for $200 an hour, there's no way I'm going to do that. And I get it.
But on that, sorry to interrupt you, but on that, I think in our Western culture, you know, they might, if Weston Hughes' back is killing him, you can see that from Houston, that is a whole different ballgame. He will go be seen for his back, but if something was going on in his head, he'd be much likely to be seen in our sport, it feels like. Right?
Right. Yeah. And I think that stigma's still there. You know, if I can understand the comment correctly, but it's, you know, I think it is very, and I guess I should, you know, there are people that certainly do that, that go out and get that help. And so I don't want, I guess, undermine that. And I think back to the idea, Tommy Joe, too, the idea of being broken. I think everybody needs to know that that's okay. You know, like we're broken. That's okay. You know, that's what makes us so special. And that's what makes us so unique. I used to say that I lost my identity. I didn't know who I was as an announcer. As long as the committee was happy and everybody else was happy, then that's okay. That's what mattered. But I had no identity in that for the first 15 years of my career. So when anything got hard, I had nothing to fact check it against. I didn't know who I was or what I stood for. Right. I'm like, I don't know. I'll just keep going, because if this guy's happy, I'll get hired and I can go and support my family. So that was kind of a lot of the troublesomes for me. But again, sorry. And I know that I'm all over the place, Ken. I'm just excited to talk about this stuff. But yeah, your Weston Hughes example. It's yeah, we often go and get those things. I also think because it's not invisible, right? Especially as a man, if we can fix it with money or our hands, it's like, hey, I can go to Sports Med and they can do this and do that. But then there's that uncertainty when it comes to that mental capacity, because like, is there something wrong with me? Right? What's the story in my head? And how loud is it getting? Right? And then it often gets louder when we do see those injuries, or, you know, it gets louder when I'm tired. You know, exhaustion makes cowards of us all. Well, how about that 24 hours you drove and then you missed one and then you're in a bad headspace? I think so. For sure you would be. So now I'm tired. I'm broke. It's the middle of July. Everybody's saying I should go home, but I think if I can just make it work. And I mean, I love this sport. This has given me everything, you know, so I, you know, but it's like, it makes sense why sometimes the mental health is at stake for some of these people. And Tommy Joe, and you mentioned the Beavers family experience. There's a lot of times we don't see it. And a lot of times when we jump to that idea of losing people, it does come as a shock and as a surprise, right? Because we learn to do such a good job of hiding it. So I always think too, like even publicly, it's like, which role do we play? So do I play the role where I need to be that self-advocate? And am I able to just be courageous enough, or maybe it's vulnerable enough, or whatever it may be, to ask for help? Or what am I seeing collectively kind of in a system and as a, you know, as a family or as a friend? Because one of the things we'll often ask clinically is how far are they from their baseline? Because we have people that we know that they always look like they're mad and they say five words, but they're just happy as all heck, right? Or we see somebody that's just always, you know, in our face and awesome and great. It's those moments when we start to see the changes. And then so we'll look for those changes, but then we'll also look for length of time. When we're starting, when mental health turns into mental illness, right? We haven't taken care of our mental health, so it switches into mental illness. It's often for a prolonged amount of time. We can have a bad day. We all have them. Right. And I mean, that's okay. We bounce back the next day or after that weekend. I have a bad weekend and my series doesn't work at Houston. By Tuesday, I'm okay again and on we go.
But I want to stop you because I want to ask you something. So you said baseline.
Yeah.
Okay. But you said it can often be how far you are off the baseline, but that's not always down.
No.
Right. It's not always down. It could be euphoric.
You bet.
It could be, you know, the other direction. And the second thing that I'm hearing, correct me if I'm wrong, sure, all of you on the call, is that if we're aware of people we love, if we're just aware, mm-hmm, and maybe if we listen, because I say this to my wife all the time, do I look like a guy? Like anybody that knows me, do I look like a guy that says, talk to me? Like, I don't, right. I don't really want to know your problems. And I can't tell you how many people tell me their problems. Mm-hmm. And what I'm learning for the first part of my thought, the whole time I'm thinking and trying to figure out the solution and tell them the right thing, when all maybe God wants me to do is listen. He gave me two ears and one mouth. Does that have any clinical validity that maybe we should just listen?
It has way more than we give it credit for, right? We often talk about so much of the time, it's just the powers in holding space, and it is just listening. But so I don't think we ever need to undervalue that because I'm like you, and even as a clinician, Tommy Joe, and I think why I spend a lot of time in the mental performance and kind of coaching space is because often with a male-built brain, we think often first and foremost of solution. We're solution-focused thinkers. How do I fix this? I've got to fix this. Where, and pardon me, I don't mean to start any conversation. It's like, I identify as a male. That's how I was born. And then if we look biologically, you know, at a born female in their brain, they're able to kind of, you know, built a little different in their brain structure where it's like we can just kind of hold space and be there in support and they feel more connection through that. So there truly is that idea that holding space and just hearing somebody and knowing that I'm walking.
What does holding space mean? Well, you're saying holding space. Sure. Kind of define that for those of us that are dumb. Sure. Like
no,
me.
Gosh. Well, hey, man, I didn't know what it meant 6 months ago either. So, it's kind of a clinical term we'd use. And it's just like, so holding space is like, you know, I'm holding this space and trying to make it as safe for you as I can or as safe as you can feel so that you can just kind of, you know, like you said, somebody's telling me their problems. Just know that I'm here to hold space for you and I can listen. I probably don't have any answers for you, Tommy, but I need you to know that, hey, I got you. And if there's anything I can do, please let me know. Man, I'm really
well, just like Joe B said. Joe B said, pick up the phone and call me.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. And
right.
And we don't have to have answers. Right. We get so worried. It's like, they called them and they're not doing good. And they have to have an answer for them. And hey, make sure you get up in the morning and go for a walk and eat healthy and get to the gym. Yeah. All great things. But a lot of times in those first few moments, I just need somebody to listen to me that I know that I can trust and I can feel that connection with is really what that first step is a lot of times.
That's very cool. Greg, anything come to mind as you listen to Brett?
I think it's very interesting with what's going on and how he's explaining the way the mental health is, you know, because you don't really, as a man, you do try to like kind of work through it yourself and feel like no one wants to, you know, I don't want to put my burdens on anybody else. They're not going to have the solution for me. And, you know, there are people out there that do have solutions that can, you know, hold your space for you.
Yeah.
So it's very interesting.
Yeah. Well, I don't think it's fair to say, I can say my wife and most women, they're fixers too.
Sure.
And they internalize it. I know in my situation, I'm usually the one saying, let go, let God, it'll work itself out. And my significant other is the one saying, no, we're going to work on this. So I think that, you know, the woman, they're also fixers, I think, but I think they're more compassionate. They definitely are tougher. And I mean that. Mm-hmm. God built them tougher. Mm-hmm. They can go through a lot more as a whole than a man. This isn't placating any XY or XX. It's just the truth.
Yeah.
So Kendra, what does this, what's rattling around in your head on this with Brett? Anything come to mind?
I guess, well, there's a couple things for me that like, I would love to leave people with, you know, for one thing that if you're feeling, you know, something that doesn't feel good, it is that it's a strength to actually, you know, be open about it, seek, you know, talk to people.
Yeah.
I think most cowboys that I know would almost say be embarrassed to think of calling a mental health professional.
Sure.
I think that that's a little piece of our culture. And I would also say that a little bit of what we've hit on, we all know that the rodeo life, you know, the roller coaster, it's It's not as glamorous as what it looks like at the Thomas & Mack. And I would just love, you know, we talk all the time about, you know, it's in order to have long-term success, confidence is a huge key. And when you have just had three all-night drives in a row, and maybe, you know, you got outrun at the last two rodeos, or maybe you're a bucking horse rider and you got, you know, a 48 point dink three rodeos in a row or whatever, to keep showing up, yeah. Like, you know, I'm going to win it today. Like every time I show up, I got this, whatever. And of course there's that line, a whole nother subject, the line between cockiness and confidence, you know, sure. That nobody really wants to cross, which I think if I understand correctly, cockiness is not a sign of confidence. Actually, it's like a mask, but anyway, that's a whole different subject. But I would love to leave cowboys listening to this on the way to the rodeo. It's like, I would love to leave them with some, you know, if you're feeling, you know, stressed out or sad or down or whatever, like you are absolutely not alone. You're absolutely not crazy. And if you're human, it happens to us all. Like, and none of us is perfect, but mm-hmm. I mean, these things we're talking about in our brain, what's more important in your whole body than your brain?
Sure.
It's real, and you're not weak or crazy to step mm-hmm. forward, that you could, you know, use a hand to try to sort something out. Yeah. It's actually a sign of strength.
Yeah. Yeah. I love that.
Grow a pair and call somebody.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
Is that too much? I mean, I'm just saying, as we listen,
sure.
As we start to talk through this, if you're on the receiving side, create space, whatever the hell it was you said, get whatever,
sure.
your big block, your container of space for someone to listen. If you're on the other side and you're feeling, so correct me if I'm wrong, because you're the expert. If you're feeling away from your baseline,
sure.
Maybe you should recognize something you might need to talk to somebody. Fair?
Yeah, I think so. And I think one of the things too that we often we say, well, I've got to go see somebody. And sometimes that person to help you return to baseline or to make you feel better doesn't always have to be a therapist. I think sometimes it's like, how can I confide in that person, or how do I open up to someone? Because there is tremendous power. Because anytime we want to grow or change, there has to be a degree of vulnerability, which is scary for some. And I think vulnerability for me, and I was scared too. I remember my wife years ago said to me, hey, Brett, I think you should go see someone. I think it'd be good for you to maybe go talk to somebody. You're maybe fighting through some things, you know. And I remember saying to her, like, are you kidding me? Like, do you know who I am? Like, what? And I, now it's what I do for a living, and it's my life's work and passion. So, I mean, I say sorry to her every day. But, yeah, she just saw something and recognized, but I wasn't willing to accept it. So I get that side, because I knew I was going to have to be vulnerable. But those of you listening on the other end, I think, for me, vulnerability is like just hanging in those tough moments for another second or two. Geez, I just don't like the way this feels. I don't know, something's wrong with me. It's like, lean into that for just another second or two and maybe just kind of get curious. Okay, I wonder why I'm feeling like that. Because it's okay. We all do. And you guys have said it. It's like, man, we're going to feel the feels. It's these all-night drives. And, you know, we haven't drawn nothing. It sucks. I often think the power is still in acceptance. Because we got to feel the feels, man. And we used to just shove these feelings down. I would say, like, the strength is in feeling the feelings. But what are you going to do with them? Hey, I'm not feeling right. I'm not working right. Maybe there's something that can help me. That's okay.
Well, and every once in a while, like, I've known cowboys who actually just kind of got to their wits' end and pulled up and went home in July.
Sure.
Maybe for 2 weeks or a month, and everybody was like, where in the world? And they came back like a new person, like they're, or whatever, you know, there's different things. But I think it's really important before we walk away here that, like, this is not a struggle of timed eventers or rough stock guys. This is something that young people and teenagers and old guys and Hall of Famers and NFR guys and circuit guys and people from the spectrum have all dealt with. And it's not particular to you, or, and you're not a loser or a weak person if you're dealing with it.
Yeah.
Well, and I would say, because we're kind of talking about driving overnight, missing your calf. You said this earlier, Kendra, and I think this is important to bring up, that you don't have to just be losing to not be full, to not feel good, because it's often the people that they're the most successful, that are on top, that are saying, that sit there and go, I've got everything. This is success. It's not enough. What's next? And so you don't just have to have drove overnight or missed your cast. You could be on the top of the mountain. And you said this, Kendra, this is affects everybody.
Joe
you could be on top. Yeah. You could be on yeah. top of the mountain and broken.
Yeah.
And you need to lean in again, like Brett said, lean in, take a breath, breathe in reality, and call somebody. Fair?
Yeah. And I, yeah, there's just sometimes we just can't do it alone. You know, we got a farrier for a reason. We got a horse chiropractor for a reason. And it's okay. And even in that idea of strength that we talk so much about, I always said, you know, 10 years ago, I thought I was strong. But, and I say this, it's just my story. I was kind of a weak, scared little boy. And that's what I felt like when I turned the microphone off and sitting in the hotel by myself and lonely and sad. And I say, I went and I did a little work. And I'd love to say, hey, I took the last 10 years, you guys, and now I don't want to ever undervalue, but I wish I knew how good I would feel with the amount of work I did. I did not completely change everything about my life. I did not. But I do know now, as I sit here after doing some work and investing in myself and my mental health, I'm the best version of the dad I've ever been. I'm the best husband I've ever been. I have huge clarity on who I am as a person and what I stand up for and what I believe in. And I always say, like, just because it's the, you know, the male side, it's like, I'm more willing to throw down with anybody, you know, for me to stand up because I have clarity. I didn't 10 years ago. I was, you know, the pure country, the George Strait, I was the dancing chicken. I just had to jump off the stage. Right. And so it's just I had to jump off the stage and recalibrate some things. And we often talk, hey, I was broken. And Tommy Joe, pardon me, sometimes I challenge that expression. And I know it's like I think, geez, I was broken. Yeah, we're all a little broken. But I like to think I was just a little off on my left front. You know, I was just kind of missing a step there. And when I made a few little adjustments, holy smokes, this weight came off my chest. And it wasn't this, you know, hey, you went to therapy every day for 10 years. For some people, that's their story. And I'm going to walk alongside them if I have to. For me, it wasn't necessarily my story. But when I started to kind of be open to some things, be a touch vulnerable, man, I got to show up for the people that matter in my life. And that's where I went, you know, my career changed. Because I'm like, geez, I needed somebody for me. I want to go be that person for other people. Because there's so many beautiful people out there that could just use a nudge, use an ear. You know, so that's what we're trying to do.
There's more to fitness than what you find at the gym.
That's right.
Okay. Well, long story, long show, lots to talk about. Let's just do a quick round table.
We didn't talk about Ty.
Yeah.
Oh, well, I tell you what, the short answer of what Kendra's putting is what kind of pushed Brett.
Yeah.
If I'm wrong, you can speak to this. To really go, you know, we always have this gut feeling of what we want to do. And sometimes it's things in our life
sure.
that tip us over the edge and make us go that way. And that was the case with you and Ty Pazabon. Is that correct? Before I bail out.
Yeah, Ty was someone that I considered a dear friend and was just, it was funny. I was thinking about, I knew we were going to talk today. And there's the Billy Dean song in the 8 Seconds movie about Lane Frost every once in a while. You know, and every once in a while, someone comes along, that one in a million heart. And it's funny, when I think about that song, I think so much about Ty from a Canadian perspective and my generation, because he was truly that. He was just this magical human. And he was one guy that when I think back, he just made everybody around him better and happier. And it was just, the guy was magic, you know, but just worked through some stuff and regrettably had suffered some concussions. And he would go and win the Canadian finals in Saskatoon and a few weeks later went to the World Finals and won nearly $100,000 at the PBR World Finals and a few weeks later took his own life. So, you know, he was 25 years old in the midst of January with such a beautiful family. But Ty also post-mortem was diagnosed with CTE. And there's tremendous complications when it comes to CTE, and he suffered them because of the concussions that were a result of him riding bulls for a living. So ultimately CTE, and I'm not an expert in that area, but we do know that, you know, brain injuries like that change the shape and change how our brain works. Of course, CTE has been kind of more widely popularized in football, but Ty was one of those first cases where CTE was diagnosed in a bull rider. So, and when we lost Ty and when he died by suicide, it sent shockwaves through the world. But of course, as a Canadian, everybody knew him. And everybody wanted to be his best friend. I said, that was always if you got to be Ty Pozzebon's best friend, that was the cool thing. And that was the place to be. So he was really magnetic that way. So when we lost him, it sent shockwaves through our world. But as a result of that, the Ty Pozzebon Foundation has done incredible things. I wish everybody could see the impact it's had, because I say Canadian soil. I mean, they've raised funds to have the Canadian Pro Rodeo Sports Medicine Team at every PBR event in the country. The education that they offered and the support that they continue to try and offer Western sports athletes in and out of the arena, they're just continuing to evolve all the time. There's nothing that I've been a part of or anyone that has left the legacy like Ty has. And of course, man, we wish he was here more than anything in the world, but his legacy has been tremendous. And he's one of those guys, and whether I'm getting philosophical, it doesn't feel like he's gone, or at least I'll speak from my vantage point. It's like, he's just with us all and he's still cheering us on. And he's making sure we're okay. And in my journey, and when I talk about the journey, when I kind of needed some help, I said, I kind of reached out and I started to do the work and I invested in some therapy and some self-help stuff. And I said, it's like I was paddling my boat over the river and I got to the other side and up I got and I turned around and I looked over there, but there's so many wicked awesome people over there. So it's like now my job is to just load my boat back up and bring them with me. And it's like Ty's right beside me paddling that boat. Just continues to motivate me every day. Like he's right alongside me. And it makes me smile every day. It's sad. It's sometimes I can't comprehend it. Like it's just, I don't know what it is. That memory and that feeling. I mean, he's still here saying, you know, go get him. So I completely changed careers with a lot of that motivation because I knew in the Western sports world I wasn't alone. But I also knew that guys in the Western sports world and their culture weren't going to just reach out to anybody. You know, we look through the yellow pages and, hey, I'm going to go see this counselor or this psychologist. Probably not going to happen. You know, I'm a full-figured, loud, big personality male, man. And I always say I'm not for everybody, but there's a lot of people that walk through my door because that's who I am. And I knew that I could be that person for some of those people. And I guess I say this too. I wish sometimes I could give you the list of people. And I mean, there's a major confidentiality in the work I do, and it's for good reason. But sometimes I wish, you know, I could show the list on the wall because I'm so proud of those people that have come through the door, Western sports athletes. And I work with lots of hockey players and, you know, they're coming through the door and we're making those shifts. And Ty's a huge motivation for me when times get tough and the road gets weary. I know that I've got work to do and he helps me. I always say win. It's like at this point in my life, I want everybody to win. But win for me means what's important now. And what's important now is making sure that we can show up for the people we care about and supporting them as best we can. And Ty lets me do that.
Thank you, Ty.
I'll tell you one thing. You can tell you're an announcer.
Oh. Yeah, right. Hey.
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 Very good. Well, Brett, we really appreciate you coming on. We ask if you wouldn't mind keeping that app downloaded because we may be reaching out to you in the future.
You bet.
As different things come up, if you're willing to join us again. Thank you. Thank you for making time. Thank you for sharing your insights. And we're very much appreciative. And we hope you have a blessed day and a good evening.
Thank you so much for having me.
You bet. Thank you, sir. Okay, it's been a big day, heavy stuff to talk about, and we want to We want to kind of wrap it up real quick here. Thanks to Joe B and Jenna and Brett for coming on. Greg, any kind of final thoughts on the day? Anything striking to you?
I think it's eye-opening. Really, everybody kind of needs to take a look at themselves on the inside and make sure that they're good. There's so much stuff that happens to us on a daily basis with, you know, being bombarded with social media and the news and, you know, your careers and stuff like that. We really need to feel, you know, that we're in a good space. And if we're not, then we should probably definitely take a look at getting some help or talking it out or finding somebody that can listen to you. I saw this commercial recently for Mental Health Day, which I thought was very, very striking. They had two guys sitting at a football stadium, and one guy is, you know, kind of just sitting there, looks like he's depressed. The guy next to him is cheering every time the team scores a goal or, you know, does something great. And it goes through a little process of that. And the one guy's looking worse and worse, and the other guy just normal, having a good time. And then at the end, it finishes with the depressed guy sitting there, and there's an empty seat where the guy was that was all, you know, cheering and just being, you know, like you couldn't tell that guy was having a problem. So one of the things we need to look at, and the other thing I wanted to mention was, is if you need help or if you are feeling suicidal, the number to call is 988. It's the National Hotline for Suicide Prevention. Get help and just do right by yourself.
Kendra, final thoughts?
I guess the final thought I will say as a journalist is I have spoken to every, you know, champion for generations and decades. And we talk all the time about, you know, the mental aspect to winning, but we really don't, as a rodeo family, address other elements of mental health. And it's long overdue. It's time. It is not a sign of weakness. If you want to say that you've never, you know, been bummed out or, you know, anything like that, it's like, you're not a human. And so for us to be a little bit more open about it, and for people, you know, hopefully this is you know, I'm so grateful to like Joe and Brett both, you know, coming on to talk openly about it, because reaching out to family and friends when you're having a hard time, whether, you know, you're not winning, you're broke, whatever it is, it is not a sign of weakness. We all need help, and we all need other people, and we should all strive to be better friends, better family members, and to be there for people, because, you know, even just a sympathetic ear or like Joe B said, be that person people can call at 3 o'clock in the morning. No questions asked. Call me anytime.
Yeah. So Joe B said two things. He said, you better have two things. You better have someone you can call. And so my end on this is, he said, you better have faith. I can tell you personally, I'll ask all of you on there and listening, how's your faith? There's something larger. For me, it's my Lord and Savior for me. And for everybody, it may be different, but how's your faith? Is there something, there's something bigger than just you? Joe B mentioned both friends and faith. So if you're out there, do a better job at listening. Just listen to people. Just listen. Be there. Be willing. It's not, life's not so fast that you don't have time to have a conversation. Life's not so bad that you can't talk to somebody. So please ask for help if you need it. Lean into faith and the much bigger entity, our Lord, that can help you. And until we talk again, God bless all of you. We can do this together.